Because then you gave us the 2 minutes for everyone to join. So excellent. And I'm going to put on the, or I'm going to request anyway, to put on the AI companion, Tanya, if you don't have it.
I will get it
Oh,
started.
okay, cool. Thanks. I always like to do that now. I'm addicted to it, which is probably some of the things we're going to talk about today. So welcome, everybody. Like Tanya said, I do host this, from time to time, especially if we need a host, because as Matthew knows, I love this call and I don't want it to end. So I'm happy to jump in. I'm happy to talk to you all about what either if you read the articles or even if you didn't have a chance to read all of them, feel free to jump in because we'll talk about what they are. And I'll actually give you a quick summary today. Sometimes we do summaries, sometimes we don't, but I'll share my screen. I asked AI to help me come up with a fun summary so it wasn't completely dreary. Okay, hold on, where to go? Okay. Here we go. So we can have a little bit of fun with the summary today. So the first article was about why forming diverse teams is harder in uncertain times. And they talked about how, when there's a time of crisis or a time of tension, it says, you know who I want on my team? Someone just like me. Whether it's, whatever dimension of diversity we're talking about, we want to be with people like us in times of crisis. So the article was about, okay, so what do we do about that as leaders to keep the diversity intact while we're in times of crisis? And they talked about things like structure, psychological safety, so that people can feel more in control. The next one, and I asked AI, please tell me something about that relates to org design from this article too. Don't just tell me what the article was about. So the second article was how successful startup teams allocate roles and who gets to be the boss, essentially. And they talked about how it's somewhat about experience, but it's also about social clout. So some of these, I feel like these first two were somewhat new and potentially controversial ideas, but that's what the studies found. So takeaway is assign roles not just by skills, but also by perception. Because optics matter, it says. Okay, third one, why pods could be the future of leadership and org design. It's not just for peas and podcasts anymore. Pods are the new power move. So they tie it to AI, they tie it to leadership, they tie all good things that you want to the concept of pods, which I feel like we've been doing for a long time, but we can talk about that when we talk about the article. Taps into our natural preference for tribe-like collaboration, and you can build collaboration with your team and let AI handle the routine work while pod leaders become coaches and culture shapers. So you get more agility, safety, and innovation in fast-moving environments. So design takeaway is organize around teams, not individuals. Okay, fourth article, linking org design and workforce planning. This was a run one by Deloitte with some folks that are friends of ours from OrgView contributed to this article. And it was about not treating org design and workforce planning as separate, but integrating them together so that you don't get so what's the takeaway here? Integrate structure and talent strategy, match today's people to tomorrow's needs before the market surprises you. And then the last article was a key question when organizing, how do we group roles or units? So I'm very excited to talk to you all about this article because in the article, he's talking about a longer academic study that they did where it is about how to group team roles into teams, right? What do we organize around? And how do we minimize handoffs? He talks about. So, minimizing coordination headaches. Don't just wing your org chart, use evidence tools and real design logic to make grouping decisions that actually work. And he included a link to a little challenge that you could play with and move people around and see how optimized it is. So, I don't know if some of you played with that, but I got completely addicted to it. Couldn't solve it. Can't wait to talk about it. And so, we'll talk about that too. Okay, so that's a summary of the articles. Now let's Tanya, if you can pop up the which one, did you find most useful, we'll see which one you all want to talk about first.
The votes are coming in. Oh, it's a good
Okay.
split this year or this month.
There were some interesting ones this month. I hope we get to talk about all of them.
Well, then you just facilitate it in that direction.
You know I'm going to.
Right, I'll give you a couple more seconds if anybody else wants to add a vote. Oh, it looks like y'all have voted. Here we go.
Okay, which one? Who's the winner? Oh, let's see. Oh, okay. Interesting. No one cares about how the successful startups at all. Why pods could be the future of leadership, or leadership was the number one voted for, and second will go to the org design and workforce planning. Okay, so why pods could be the future of leadership? Who wants to get us started with why you picked that and what you find interesting about the pod model?
I'll go first. I think they kind of addressed one of the factors in there, and that is just the way the times are now with so much change and questions of and organizations and how if they're going to thrive. Keeping teams smaller allow for more flexibility in navigating those changes. So to me, that was, I think, one of the things that stood out for me was, we've all lived the last 5 years through this crazy world of ours. And I think that the smaller teams for sure creates more stability and ability to navigate and change quickly.
Great. Yeah, thank you.
Let me just build on that about the last 5 years, the new world we've entered into. For me, four of the articles that we read are about how we used to think about organization design. It's just more of the same. What about this? What about that? This one was the one for me that is forward-looking. It's what's it going to be like in the future? And for me, it wasn't so much about small teams. It was about using teams as the leadership pod to organize all this new stuff that's happening. How's AI coming into play? How's automation playing out? How do we manage all that? How do we supervise it? How do we, in particular, how do we apply what's human about us in organizing this brave new world? So to me, it was eye-opening.
Okay, great. What was Richard, I just have a follow-up question. Tell us what you thought about the AI piece of the puzzle there with as it applies to teams.
It's still evolving. It's a topic that I'm doing some work on, and it's rapidly evolving. If you look at the most important, so I think McKinsey did this study a year and a half ago. What are the most important applications of AI? And there was a whole laundry list. They did it again this last year, and the list has completely changed. And it's moved from research and compiling ideas and to managing my workday, managing my work group, manage it. It's shifted from kind of the intellectual information gathering and analyzing to more active using it to control things.
Okay, great. Thank you. Who else has input on the pods being the future of leadership and org design?
I would raise a question. This is Mary. Or the question it raised for me had to do with continuity. So I see the pods as a useful and important mechanism for the level of agility that we need with all of these inputs, as you've mentioned, Richard. But it makes me wonder if we continue to have that agility and that pod structure at all of these levels or at some of these levels. And in particular, the leadership relationship question surfaces for me. If we're constantly transitioning leaders and teams, when and where do the relationships get formed? And if the assumption is, well, they'll just keep reforming, I'm curious because I'm not sure we've done a very good job of it in the more static way of work. So why will we be better at it in the more dynamic way of work? So it raised questions for me more than anything else. And would love to hear any reactions to that because I don't have a point of view yet. Kind of do, actually.
So it's what levels, right? What levels, and then how stable, right? Those are the
Yeah,
two
like, are
opinions.
we talking? I feel like in some ways there seems to be this conversation where we're like throwing everything up for change again. And I'm like, does everything need to change? Or does some of it need to change? And so, are the pods going to be occurring at all different levels so that we have that ability to shift and pivot? That's my sense of the big message. And is that necessary? And I may have that was sort of what I walked away with as questions.
Anyone have thoughts on that?
I don't know if it's related to what Mary is kind of digging into, but I will say that the best experience I've had with pods is when there's a clear, you know, incentive or goal or target. And usually for me, that's been customer facing or sales focused or commercial focused pods around account teams. Account teams are, when I think of pods, and without even having formal rules or even formal governance, they just naturally form. Because if you're a salesperson assigned to an enterprise account, a customer person, a support person, a service person, you just naturally know you have to work together. In most cases, sometimes, you know, you need some direction and focus. But I have seen great customer leaders or, you know, client leaders that can, they don't have all these people reporting to them. They're dispersed, but they can kind of bring that vision together because there's a very like concrete, we are all working for this X client. So I think we're, you know, thinking about how do you kind of learn from that natural pod grouping and apply some of those principles to other functions is what comes to mind. But I think that that's one that I've seen naturally when it works really well without even, you know, when you can formalize it, great, because you can all be working towards a specific customer target or sales goal or whatever it is. But I found that wildly successful as customer teams become more dispersed, and, you know, there's usually a customer team under a customer officer, there's a sales team, there's a marketing team, and how did that all come together? So just based on some of my experience.
Great. Thank you. Well, if with your permission, I'll take off my facilitator hat and give my input on this one too, because this one is close, near and dear to my heart. And I literally just got off a call about this very topic. So I work mostly in software and product teams. So there's some kind of a output, right? There's some kind of an execution delivery happening. So we've been using Teams for many years, but the most exciting thing about it too is that it gives us, like, from a business perspective, from a financial perspective, those teams become an asset. So we invest in making them work better, and we can know their output, which it's hard to know the output of an individual, but I can really know the output and capacity of a team, like their ability to produce something. So now I can tie the cost of that team and the investment in that team to the output that that team is producing, which it's very hard to do when you're doing individual-based capacity planning. So that's what's exciting about it to me, but it was not in the article. But it's not for all things, though, Mary, to your point. So it's mostly for the delivery teams more than it is for, you know, you have sort of pod-based services teams too, but it's not the same as, you really see it and you really can make the investment in it when they're delivering something. Okay.
I was just going to add to the conversation that example of Hare that he uses, or Hire and Gore, mm-hmm. are both interesting. Like in the case of Hire, they have all of these micro enterprises that are organized around customers and customer needs. And it's almost like having a bunch of mini businesses inside of a larger business organization. And I just think that idea of giving people that kind of responsibility for, you know, the future of the organization in a sense, and seeing concrete achievable outcomes and so forth, is a really exciting way to increase employee engagement.
Yeah, great. And empowerment, right? Because they're closer to their output, their outcome. Cool. Okay, anyone else? Thoughts on pods? I'll give you one more little seed and maybe someone will build on it. The other thing is, because we all know about the storming, forming, norming thing. And Mary, to your point, like, of course, they're not going to live forever together as a pod, but longer than hardly, you know, longer than as fluid as it is when we have people on projects, we can spend less time in storming. Right? Because it's like sometimes when you're on project teams and you're on multiple teams, you're constantly storming. But at least we can minimize that storming phase. Okay, anyone want to build on that or anything else about this article?
I think to add to the conversation there that you mentioned, Jardina and Mary, about relationships, right? Like maintaining relationships when these teams may be temporary in nature. I think maybe one of the points the author made was that the leads of these teams should all be more focused on the, you know, coaching, the emotional intelligence aspects, right, of relationships. And I imagine that might be somewhat of a key to keeping these teams and the relationships effective in short periods of times, is that focuses more on that aspect. So that might be a thought that adds to that. And obviously AI helps take that lead away from the data piece a little more so that they can focus on the relationships and the human piece of the teams.
Yeah,
just kind of building on that, I was going to say, I felt like the AI dimension of the piece, it's a very short piece, but I'd like to hear more about that, like how AI could really take over the role of the middle manager in terms of some of those administrative functions that David was talking about.
Yeah, I mean, he talks about how AI can do the routine work and then the people can do the essentially creative work. But I do feel like he shoehorned AI in there a little bit to make sure that AI was in there. There was a sentence in there that said AI literacy equips leaders to leverage tools for data-driven decision making. Does anyone know what that means? I don't know what that means. Okay, anything else on this article? All right, so let's go to our second place winner, which I think was linking organization design and workforce planning from many of our friends at OrgView and Deloitte. So who wants to talk about why this one was voted? Or why you voted for this one?
Well, I didn't vote for that one because I can't imagine doing them separately. Every org design I've ever done have included some of the senior HR workforce planning people. And in several organizations, it was a hard sell. I had to convince them to do it, but I just can't imagine doing them separately. I just don't think it works.
I think it's directed at larger organizations because it is separate in every large organization, or most now. I mean, it's not Calm and Neva together. I'll phrase it another way.
Okay. So Gina, what have you seen when they're separate? Have you seen the things that he talks about in here?
Yeah, because it becomes a process and then you don't have time to iterate. I mean, it's just there's a quality impact. It just doesn't really come to fruition because you can't, it's too hard to connect it back. You might get through a project, but it doesn't sustain.
Hmm. What other what input do other folks have on this article? And actually, a question I had was, does everyone know what workforce planning is? I didn't, but maybe you all do. So I had to tell AI to tell me what the difference between workforce planning and org design is. And so in case anyone doesn't know, workforce planning forecasts what roles and skills are needed, and org design designs how the roles are structured.
Jordina, and team again, so I didn't read this article, but I would offer, just from a practice point of view, this question just keeps coming up more and more. And I'm finding partners in the HR space, you know, I'm hearing workforce planning all the time. And I'm hearing it outside of my workplace as well. And my theory is, I think with all of the curiosities that AI is bringing forward, all the unknowing, that I feel like we're almost over-rotating in the other direction, which is saying we need to know. And workforce planning is the attempt to need to know. And so I agree, Richard, with what you're saying. I think workforce planning ideally goes hand in hand with any organizational design, particularly where structural change is occurring. But I'm unclear why the volume has gotten so loud on it. And I'm imagining it to be because of AI. But I'm, once again, open to other people's experience. I'm glad it's getting more attention, but I don't know that it's going to provide the answers to what we don't know that AI is bringing around the bend for us.
So. I think another data point is the volume of layoffs. Nobody mm-hmm. enjoys them, even the people that are still there. So I think that's why it's rising in attention also, in hopes right. that it can be mitigate some of that impact so it's not so dramatic. The challenge, again, work with really large organizations, has been it's the skills thing and the data on skills. So I think there's also, to your point, I think there's enthusiasm because I think there's some platforms coming on like Eightfold and Workera around skills. And the challenge has been things, everyone getting a perspective. So like if it's a clinical role, like a nurse, you're an RN or you're not. Or like data science has pretty structured things, project management, there's a few things that are structured. It's been harder to get it to like knowledge worker roles and things like that. But I think that's coming along with AI in these platforms. So I think it's your point and then also the volume of layoffs in the last couple of years.
What were the two platforms that you mentioned?
One is called Workera. Workera, I put in the chat. And then the other one's called Eightfold AI. Josh Burson is a partner or investor or something like that. I'll put them in the chat.
Great, thank you.
There's more probably. Those are just the ones I know of as prominent.
I definitely agree with that. I think the focus on data and numbers to help companies make these decisions, it's obviously more heightened for all the reasons you guys just talked about. I remember over 10 years ago, I was at Deloitte when they partnered with OrgView here in Canada. The partnership started over 10 years ago. And I remember, and I was in the org design practice, and I remember we were trying to bring this next phase of work to clients aside from the structure and the role design. And it was just people, nothing to do with AI 10 years ago or, the right sizing that's happening. But I do remember that there was a different level of stakeholders involved when we got to that phase, because it was getting to another deeper level of, information on roles and talent and FTE. And so I think that's a big part of what I notice is, and again, I work more on the client facing size of the organization, sales, customer teams, where we can work with the client on org decisions and principles and the structure and how will we implement. But the rubber really hits the road. And there's a lot of subjectivity, you could argue, still in the org design process of making those decisions, as much as we try to standardize and bring some great framework to it. But when we get to the workforce design part of it, you cannot argue with the data. You cannot argue with, you can change the model, you can change the variables, but once it's set in place and you know what those variables are, this is what the data is saying. This is how many sales reps you need to cover this many territories and this much revenue. And so in projects, and I've only had a few of these where we've had both components back to back, because they're hard to get to. They're big and they have different stakeholder teams. But I will say when you get to that workforce, when the rubber hits the road and this is what's going to happen and this is how it's going to permutate, the conversation changes drastically. There's more people who want to have a say. The change management is very tricky. You're hoping that everything you built in the earlier phase is going to help carry through the momentum. But I think to what some of the people were saying in the beginning around, you can't have one without the other. I agree. I just think, I think the stakeholders, I think the folks who sit at the table are at a different level, have different points of view, and you're working with real hard, almost undebatable metrics and data when you get to that detailed phase. So I find them very, very kind of challenging to navigate a full spectrum like that, a project that has all of that in it. And the key, obviously, I think, hopefully it's not saying everything that everybody knows, but I think the key is like trying to get to the key sponsor that's going to help you carry it to that end phase, usually at a very high level, C level. And so that's just what I found, is that it's very complicated. It's data. It cannot be argued. You're going to get people who may or may not agree at that phase, even though they would have come along the journey on the design phase. because we're getting to budget and sizing and talent and who you need. So yeah, I think getting, I don't know how others feel, but I think getting to a client that can understand that phase journey and that you need one, you know, you need the first to drive the second is very challenging. I find it very far and few between.
Mm. Thank you. How do other people's experiences compare?
I just was going to mention, like, I work in the context of an aerospace organization that had a lot of volatility in predicting its labor demand based on the number of contracts that were signed, when contracts were fulfilled for different products that it sold. And so that made it very challenging. Like, they didn't have the systems in place to really have be able to see across the entire organization, be able to predict demand and so forth. So I know Salesforce was a big step forward for them, but then getting people to input data into Salesforce as opposed to maintaining individual spreadsheets and things like this. So having that clear view across the organization was very challenging, just in addition to the layoffs and so forth. I think that's another factor, at least for some organizations, is the volatility in which workforce demand can change based on contracts being signed and so forth.
And
true.
What I'd add, oh, sorry, I thought you were through. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, oh. True. Go ahead, Gina.
Oh, I just want to add on, I completely agree with everything that you said. Is it Numra? Is that how you pronounce it? Yeah, okay, sorry. I agree with everything you said. I just want to add on the other problem too. I noticed they're looking at different data at different times because it's in different parts of the organization. So that is hindering, that is contributing to all the problems you said. And it's not a small problem.
Yeah, good point. I'll just add one story. And again, I already revealed that I don't know a lot about workforce planning. So please tell me if this is something that's taken into consideration. But at a company I was at years ago, that was one of the top, you know, Fortune 5, they added in our IT organization, we have about 1,800 people, and they decided to add 600 to increase the productivity. So 600 people, that's 30% more people. And based on like sort of the factors and data that we're talking about, they added 600 people to different places where people said they needed them. And we saw a 0% increase in productivity because they didn't add them to the places where there were constraints, right? You just added them sort of, you know, around. And so I feel like if we're not looking at also looking at constraints as part of the design and then linking that to workforce planning, you're just peanut butter spreading and you may get no benefit. So I don't know if that's something that workforce planning looks at or not, because like I said, I know nothing about it, but that's a story I always remember. That's an awful lot of people to add to get no productivity increase.
It's a really good point that you make. It feels like there's this thread of the macro versus micro design aspects of OD here. And mm-hmm. How do we tie it together? Because to your point, like Numra, you've highlighted the need to have a sponsor who can see it end to end and understand the implications of the macro and the micro reciprocally on one another. You know, each person has said something similarly, and it feels like that's the tension point. And it seems important. I think it sounds like we're all in agreement. It's an important part of the work that we do. And there are a lot of different stakeholders that we have to broker.
Yeah,
that's kind really of the good. Art of OD.
That's a really good point. That's the tension and polarity that some of us were at the conference, we talked about polarities. Mm-hmm. And you pointed out a couple of good polarities today, actually, Mary. So thank you.
Sure.
It's the local and global.
I love the example, Georgina, that you gave, because I think it's so typical. I'm surprised it's in IT, because usually you're not adding staff, you know, especially these days to that function. But regardless of function, like, it's a very typical thing, because I think to somebody who just said, like, when you do the design to when you implement it, you're talking about, you know, months, quarters that may have passed. And so what else has happened? First of all, what was that growth of FTE based on? Was it based on the work, you know, that was defined by the strategy of the organization? So what were the productivity metrics that you hired people on? What were the KPIs? You know, what are they going to mash to? But aside from that, I think all the things that we try to tell our clients, that org design is not just about the sticks and boxes, plays into that question, because you can add the 400 FTE, but what about the duplication in roles, the process inefficiencies, the bottlenecks, the, you know, all the things, the systems view of the organization. And so I really like that example because I think it's pervasive. It's like we made a decision, add or cut, doesn't matter, up or down. We made a decision to do something different with our workforce model. It wasn't successful. Well, there's a whole system. One, there's a whole system around it. Two, was it based on the same metrics that you made your original decisions on?
Well, I'll give you a little insight there, and because this is a little insight into how the world works, which is unfortunate. So the reason that they added the 600 people was because we were below the industry benchmark on how big your IT department should be compared to your revenue. So they were like, wow, we have room for 600 more people and we'll be like industry benchmark. And then the second, and then they applied them where people said that they were busy. And I hate to say it, but where people are busy is not necessarily where there's a bottleneck, right? Where in your value process, like in your value flow. So that, those are the two factors. But yes, the adding them because of industry benchmarks is never really ideal.
That's a great case study. And yes, being intentional in your strategy, right? They obviously were not making decisions based on strategy.
No. Okay, other thoughts on this article about workforce planning and org design linkages?
Okay. I will just say quickly, and I think you said it, Jordina, in the beginning, I wonder if even very mature organizations really understand what constitutes workforce planning. So I will just say that point is like our role as advisors and you know people who are working in the space is a lot of it is like peppering in that education and awareness. Like it's not just an FTE formula at the end of this that you get. You need to build the whole plan around, you know, how you're going to drive this change in your company. So I think that's maybe another obvious one, but I have found that even very mature organizations, certainly SMB, like you have to kind of educate them along the way, but I don't know that a lot of clients I work with, aside from fairly astute HR strategic people, but like a lot of clients in the business don't even really know what they mean by that.
Okay, great. Thank you. I didn't know either. So
I'm curious, does anybody know what familiar with OrgView? And could just explain the product, what it does, and so forth.
Yeah, it is a quite familiar with it. I was using it before I joined this call. So it is it's got several different modules. So it includes workforce planning and modeling and talent mapping. And so it is position-based management. So you load the whole organization, and then you can do all of the normal things you would analyze, like, you know, what levels are people at and how are they grouped and what team are they in and how big is the team? And you can customize it to, have whatever alignment you want, you know, if they're in a product group or that kind of a thing, and then you can do analysis. And so what it enables you to do is do real-time impact analysis. So if you have your operating model figured out, you can figure out what the impact would be on resourcing and calculate that that's what I do. I calculate the financial impact as we're moving along. And you can test different scenarios. So you could have three or four different drafts to see what would happen. And then it also supports activation. If you want to use it for change management, you know, flag what's changing and what you need to do and, you know, export to HRIS and that kind of a thing. There's other, we have ODF, as they're one of our sponsors. We have a couple other ones that are similar, not exactly the same, but Nikisa is one. I can put these in the chat, and Agent Noon is another. And then there's also Workday Studio is another add-on. I'll put them in here.
Tanya put something in there because we do.
Oh, thank you. Yes, Tanya. Thank you very much, Tanya. Reminder, I was trying to be objective. We have, so I am the host of a series, content series called ODXT. And so OrgView is featured on June 10th, if you'd like to join. It's around this time. So we'll put a plug in for them there. And then Agent Noon is July 22nd or 23rd. I'm putting the names in here.
Okay, thanks, Gina. All right, anything else on this article before we move on? I'm going to cover one more and then we'll vote on what caused you tension. All right, I'm going to jump to the last article because I kind of all want to know what you all did with it, which was what are we organized around? What are we grouping roles around? It kind of goes with the article that we talked about with teams, because this is one of my, thanks, Tanya. Okay, good. I'm not doing anything off key here. I want to talk about that one anyway. I mean, I struggle with this every day. It was like, what are we arranging our teams around? I had a call about this today, right? Because they've got tech teams organized around their tech domains, and then product teams arranged around product. And then there's like this mismatch, right? So what do we organize teams around? And so the hypothesis in this article was nobody really has an established method to figure out what to design teams around. And I thought, oh my goodness, yes, you're so right. So they had this whole academic article that I didn't read all of, but, and then this game that you could play with to try and organize people. So first question is, did anyone play with that game besides me? Okay, it's addictive, so don't even.
So I didn't play the game, but I read the article because I follow Nikolai and I'm very interested in his research. And for me, that statement of it's difficult to know what to organize around really captures it. And what he offers is different ways to play around with it, which I think is fabulous. And that in the overview article, the different, you know, the nine different people and how do you organize them, I've had that exact situation. And what we discovered is the most important thing to do is to make that map, just to draw the map of how are the things interdependent. And then it hardly matters how you group them because everyone understands the process. So that's my learning.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'll just add one other thing he talks about in the article. And it's important because you have to hold something constant. He says that they're optimizing to minimize coordination cost, but that's not always what you want to optimize for, right? I mean, I often optimize to improve value flow, but depends on the life cycle stage of your product, right? So it might be different. All right, other thoughts on this article, game, or academic journal article? All right, everyone play the game and then get back to us. I couldn't win it, by the way, just in full transparency. Okay, other thoughts on what we organize around? And struggles there. I think when you're moving from from functional to cross-functional, that's when it gets hard, right?
It's, again, I'll just speak very from the perspective of go-to-market commercial teams. It's like the number one question every single client all the time, no matter where they are. You know, what's that matrix of geo versus product versus vertical versus so many others, customer segment, and so many clients want to do a little bit of everything, you know. And I think from a sales perspective, I have worked with clients who were, for example, I work with a global client who was regional and verticalized, so industry based, their sales team. That's how they did their structure, and we helped them through it. We kept the regions; those are always important in sales for the most part. But we moved them to a product solution split, and then applied a little bit of verticalization as well. And so, I just think it really needs that upfront strategy piece. You need research. You need to do the competitive analysis. Whatever you can apply, again, hard data when it comes to market sizing and you know, TAMs. So I think it's one of those peripheral things that maybe doesn't fit directly in the box of, you know, org strategy and org design, but it's a very difficult thing to work through with clients, because to change legacy structures that are and to apply that, there's always a matrix when you're working in commercial teams. There's always a matrix in terms of how you organize, because you have to consider the physical footprint of the client facing team quite often. So it's a struggle.
Thank you for strategy. Thank you for validating that. Okay. Anyone else on this article? All right, Tanya, do you want to pop up the what article caused you tension? There's only two articles we didn't talk about, but just for funsies, let's do which article caused you tension. And this is not the good kind of tension, Mary, that you were bringing up before. This is it could be good kind, but it challenged your thinking. Okay. Do we get some votes, Hanya?
They're coming in. Here we go.
Okay. Okay. Oh, some people got tension from the article we just talked about. Well, I think maybe we kind of hit on some of that, but it's hard. Okay, so mostly the successful startup teams, but then also some tension from the forming diverse teams. So those were two that had some provocative elements. Let's start with the one about your startup. How successful startup teams allocate roles. What was the tension in that article caused?
I just felt like this article was reifying the status quo, and I found that very problematic.
Yes. Do you want to say more about problematic?
Reifying the status quo, like, you know, you have to be white, male, privileged institution in order to lead an organization. I just found that incredibly troublesome.
I had some, my notes to myself are, first of all, WTF, like, that was just my note to myself. But also, it you know, just because we don't like something, that doesn't mean it's not true. Right. That's what caused tension for me. The fact that, ooh, this might be true and I don't like it.
Also, it's unclear what they mean by success. A successful startup after 6 months, after a year, after 5 years, long enough to sell it for billions of dollars to some other big company. It was a very murky framework, in my opinion.
I got from the article that he was mostly talking about getting investment from VC.
So nothing to do with the success of the company. It's you want a CEO that looks good and attracts money. And yeah, study of the obvious.
Well, and is similar to the people that you're going to be getting investment from, right? Per the first article. What other thoughts did you have on this? My other comment on this one was, who's the audience? Because if I am in a startup, I don't know that I would be thinking about reading an article about it, I guess, right? You're just kind of winging it.
For me, I've never had to implement org design principles with a startup. I've never had that experience. And I don't know that most people even think about org design when they do a startup. So I think that's part of my disconnect with it is, I don't know that it was as relevant for me when I read it, along with what Matthew said.
Yeah, this is information I'd probably get from like a business agent or business manager if I were having a startup, or a board of advisors, but not an org design. I wouldn't look to org design for this. Okay, anything else on that startup article? All right, the other one that caused tension was why forming diverse teams is harder in uncertain times. What caused tension in this one? This was another one that gave us some hard truths. So this is the one that's...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the obvious here is people tend to go gravitate to the people who are like them in, you know, in hard times. And I get that. You know, first place I go is my family, who I know, right, when I'm having a hard time. So that's all great. You know, it is contrary to kind of, you know, the idea that we need to be diverse. We need to have diverse opinions, and no matter where we are in our life cycle, right? So that I think that's obvious. That's kind of the obvious truth or whatever that I got from it. That you struggle a little bit with it, but I get it.
Yeah, it's a hard truth, right? Others, what do others think? Well, I'll share the one thing I got from it was that the acknowledgement that there is a higher, like to what you said, David, there's a higher cognitive load if I have to like figure out how to integrate with somebody who doesn't think like I do, right? I mean, you know, like I have to think harder. It's, you know, and when I am in a time where I have very low bandwidth, I don't want to do that thinking.
I was just going to say something similar that a lot of clients I've worked with in the last kind of 5 years have been pre-acquisition or, you know, being acquired, but getting ready for the integration. And it's a very heightened time. And that is exactly the mindset that starts to take place, which is we need to focus. We cannot think about anything else. Just get out of the way. We need to do this. We need to get it done by X date. We have a deadline. It's very, you know, critical, compliance, whatever driven, or we need to get the valuation of the company up and we have till the end of the year. Like it becomes very single-minded and very single-threaded, which you absolutely need if you're trying to get your company sold. But it can come at the expense of a lot of collateral damage, which they will not realize until post-sale, when you start to see attrition or productivity or cultural divide, right? And so it's that tension and that, you know, how do we bring focus to a goal? We can only focus on one thing and this is how we need to get it done and let's deprioritize everything else. So it's challenging.
Well, sort of ironic there, because with mergers too, you need to bring, you have diverse cultures that you're bringing together. And I've seen that happen, exactly what you're saying, where we're so focused on integrating the systems that we didn't think about, we sort of as an afterthought thought about integrating the people, but not enough focus on bringing people together.
Okay. In some ways, the article on Pods aligns nicely with this piece, because I think the whole point of Pods is trying to create these diverse teams where people have more autonomy and people can get to know each other in smaller groups and trust one another. So maybe Pods is the answer.
Maybe Pods is the answer, right? You create a diverse pod, but they get used to their diversity. Yeah, maybe that is the answer. I thought, well, what did you think about the solutions that he gives in this article about diversity, that the answers are, what was it? The inclusive communication protocols, they cross-functional teams, which is like the pods, diverse product staff, project staffing, tighter work structures and routines, and then creating inclusive cultures, which I think when you're already in that crisis mode, I'm not sure how leaders are creating inclusive cultures. Did you think that those were useful prescriptions, or would you add something to it?
Like, I've seen that where teams are having tension and lack of understanding, that even like creating a shared workspace, even like a couple of days a week, anything you can do to create that empathy for other people and their work situation, the work they're doing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the routines is useful, because if I have to think every time I have a meeting about who to invite, it's probably not going to be diverse, right? But if we have the meeting that's already set up to be cross-functional, we don't have to think about it every time. Again, lower my cognitive load, and just have the routine set up. That's probably helpful. Okay, other thoughts on this article? Any other thoughts across the, so we hit all of them. Any other thoughts across them? I know we used to do the thing, Tanya, where we say, what's the theme across the articles? But we haven't done that. I haven't heard us do that in a while. But maybe we can do it this time.
That is directed by the facilitator, if that's a question they think they'd like to have. And it's a great one to ask for folks to maybe put something in the chat if it's a, they saw a tied theme to it.
Yeah, I mean, we're starting to theme them explicitly, but actually I don't recall if we did a theme on this one. But yeah, so go ahead and put in the chat what you think the theme is across these articles and our conversation for today. So a lot of things about groups, team maintenance is in uncertainty. I put the system view, how to work productively in groups. Let's see what else you got. I hear typing. You're getting messages in. Teams and tough times. That's like the headline. That's like the teaser, the clickbait for it. Grounding decisions on aligned and measurable outcomes. Good. Adaptability. That's been our theme lately over multiple meetings, I think. Okay, great. I don't know if there's any more coming in, but if there are, we'll capture them. Thank you all so much for attending this call, and thank you for discussing these articles in depth with all of us. I really personally appreciate all of your insights because I love these, love having someone to talk to about this stuff. Okay, hopefully we'll see you next month.
Thanks for your facilitation.
You're so welcome.
Appreciate it. Hope everyone has a great rest of your day. I'll stay on the line for a moment or two if anybody has questions before you disconnect. Otherwise, I wish you a good one.
Thank you. I'll stay with you, Tanya, just in case.
Okay.
I just had I already messaged you, Tanya, but I probably didn't do something I was supposed to do because I didn't get the articles. Maybe should I just email somebody or?
Did you sign up with European ODF to get them?
In the little newsletter subscription?
Well, so they're signing up to get ODF's community announcements,
yeah,
which is upcoming events and stuff about the conference. European ODF actually puts this newsletter together. And so to receive this actual newsletter in your inbox, you need to become a member of European ODF. Mm-hmm. Or when I send out the announcements, I list all the article names. So I have a whole blurb about it that I usually share with people who mark in their registration that they don't yet get the newsletter. So I'll send you my copy for the month. You did a great job for not having, you didn't get through all the articles.
I really want to read them and I want to play the game. So thank you.
Yes, please play the game and then ping me.
Okay.
All right, well then I will send you my copy with the little blurb that explains a bit about getting the newsletter in your inbox. And then if you have any questions from that, just let me know.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for joining.
Bye.
Hey, Eileen, how's it going?